Hi, Mom.
John, dear, did you register for your PVC?
Not yet, Mom. I'm on my way to work. I'll do it then.
Young man, did you register for your PVC?
What? Why is everyone asking me that?
The deadline is 30th of June.
John, did you register for your PVC?
What is going on today?
The website is cvr.inecnigeria.org. Please register today or you're fired.
Doc, what?
I'm kidding, but please, register.
We're happy to report that John has finally scheduled his appointment for his PVC. What about you?
Go to cvr.inecnigeria.org today. The deadline to register is the 30th of June. Hurry!
So, I know people will feel as if, why is it that people from Taraba, why are they so happy that the ex-governor was released, considering the fact that he stole money from the state coffers and all this stuff? See, it entails so much. It entails so much.
So I feel they have been punished enough. It's not as if they actually committed a murder or something that cannot be forgiven, so long as their properties were confiscated.
I don't think the pardon for them especially was completely out of place, because both of them have been, there have been rumors of them being sick.
It's not that he was a big thief. The money he stole is just quite less to what you hear others who were never convicted.
I bet you when Joel Nyame is coming down to Taraba State, I would love that you should be around. Come and see for yourself. People are happy.
From Triple E Media, I'm Ramat Mohammed, and this is The Backstory. It was about 7 months ago that the Attorney General of the Federation, his name is Abubakar Malami, he held a press conference.
The Federal Minister of Justice had received numerous applications for presidential pardon and clemency.
And he announced that the federal government had received 320 requests from prison inmates and ex-convicts. Now, these requests, they were for mercy, clemency, pardons, or reduced sentences.
Then, about 2 weeks ago, that's in the middle of April, we received news.
And in effect, 159 people were granted pardon, mercy, clemency, respite, reduction in term, among others. 85 of surviving ex-convicts were recommended.
Among the list of those recommended for some sort of pardon or clemency were current inmates, those who were convicted but died, and those on death row.
Now, the federal government, they have not released the full list of everyone who was approved for clemency, pardon, or reduced sentence. But pretty soon after Malami's announcement, we found out the names of two of the people on that list.
President Muhammadu Buhari has granted state pardon to Joshua Dareye, former governor of Plateau State, and Jolly Inyame, former governor of Taraba State. They'll be released from prison with...
Joshua Dareye is an ex-governor of Plateau State from 1999 to 2007. In 2007, Dareye was charged by the EFCC, that's the Economic and Financial Crimes Commission, of diverting over 1 billion naira. In November 2018, he was sentenced to 10 years imprisonment by the Supreme Court in Abuja. At the time of the pardon, Dareye had served over 3 years of his sentence.
The other convicted governor who received pardon was Jolly Inyame. Inyame was the governor of Taraba State from 1999 to 2007. Inyame was charged also by the EFCC in 2007 for fraud of over 1.6 billion naira. Now, in 2020, he was sentenced to 12 years in prison by the appeal court in Abuja. At the time of the pardon, Inyame had served about 2 years of his sentence. In a country that has been struggling with corruption since the very foundation, and for a president who campaigned on a strong anti-corruption posture, when these two ex-governors were first convicted, that was seen as a strong signal that the Buhari administration was serious about the war against corruption.
Now, looking at the pardon of these two politicians, and right before the 2023 elections, the whole anti-corruption effort is called into question. So it's no surprise that the pardon of these two ex-governors was met with some outrage.
All thieves, all petty thieves in our prison should be released. All!
The reaction you just heard was from human rights lawyer Femi Falana, who was filmed by Channels Television while speaking during a lecture and book presentation in Lagos. Other critics of the president's decision to pardon these two ex-governors include civil society organizations like the Center for Anti-Corruption and Open Leadership, as well as some of the president's political opponents.
But the thing is, not everyone was angry.
I don't know, as a Plateau citizen, I felt, in respect to Daria, I felt happy he was out, because I feel he isn't the only governor that has been charged with corruption. A lot of them out there that have done much worse, but yet are walking the streets free. As a Plateau citizen, I'm happy he's out.
When he was in power, Jolly, so many people benefited from his regime. I know he has stolen money, quite okay, but people felt happy during his regime. There was money. The present specialist hospital was built by Jolly Nyame. The stadium was built by Jolly. The housing estate in Taraba State, one of the housing estates in Taraba State, he was the first pioneer of all this housing scheme in Taraba State. And then the airport, he started the airport.
After all, like I said, he wasn't a big thief. You know, nothing is absolute. If you compare him to others, his own stealing was small.
We Nigerians, we have a very complicated relationship with our politicians. On the one hand, we blame them for everything that ever goes wrong and that has ever gone wrong in the country. But on the other hand, we will rush to their defense and rally behind them no matter what they do, especially when they're from our own ethnic group. So naturally, the team at Triple E asked why. Why are some people angry about the pardon while others are celebrating? And I'm here with the newest member of our team, Maryam Mohammed, to try to answer that question.
When barrister Femi Falana criticized the pardon of the ex-governors, he insisted that all petty thieves should also be released from prison.
You know why? Because under Section 17 of their constitution, there shall be equality, equal rights for all citizens. And Section 42 of their constitution says there shall be no discrimination on the basis of class, gender, whatever. So you can't take out two people on the basis of the fact that they belong to the ruling party. It's illegal. You take them out and leave them.
Falana is essentially suggesting that the law is not being applied fairly, that some people, politicians, are getting preferential treatment through the law.
And as we were doing research for this story, we came across this cartoon in the Nation newspaper. It's a drawing by Solomon the Sixth. The drawing has two panels, one on the left and one on the right. The title on the left panel reads, "How Nigerians React When a Hungry Man Steals 100 Naira Gari and 50 Naira Sugar." And that panel has a drawing of a poor man who is crying as Nigerians are throwing all kinds of insults at him.
Lazy man.
Thief.
Beat him well, well.
Bring tire.
Barao.
The other panel, the one on the right, reads, how Nigerians react when they see a politician who steals our money and comes visiting.
Clear road for the Baba.
Anything for the boys.
Twale, Baba.
Baba London.
Opo, o plenty, alaye.
Femi Falana was making the point that the law treats the politician better for committing a crime. But Solomon's cartoon makes maybe an even more disturbing point, which is that even we, the people, treat politicians better for committing the same crime.
Jungle Justice was meted on a young man late Friday as he was set ablaze after court allegedly trying to make away with a stolen motorbike. The
car incident. We will chase down and burn a thief to death in the marketplace. But a politician who steals billions upon billions, they come home to a celebration.
So yes, on the one hand, we can blame the law, the Constitution, the president for this pardon system. But what about our own actions? Why do we celebrate those politicians who steal?
As we're looking for an answer to that question, we came across a paper written by Professor Peter Eke. The paper was published back in 1975, but it's still very much relevant to us today. The paper is titled Colonialism and the Two Publics in Africa. It's a theoretical statement that tries to explain why our political life in Africa is so muddled. Professor Eke begins by pointing out that in the West, public life and private life are governed by the same set of moral principles. The foundation of those moral principles are Christian beliefs, and they serve to guide both the public and the private realm. Under that system, stealing is stealing, whether it is done in the private space or the public space.
But in Africa, we don't have a unified system of belief that connects our private lives and the public space. According to Professor Eke, we operate in two different mental spaces when it comes to our public life. On the one hand, we have the public life that is consistent with our traditional systems. And on the other hand, we have the public life that is governed by the civic system, the one introduced to us by our colonizers. Our traditional public life is consistent with our personal lives, and that traditional public life has very strict moral values. In every tribe in Nigeria, stealing is stealing. Murder is murder, regardless of your status in the society.
But our civic public life, according to Professor Eke, is something that was imposed on us. And we see it as separate from our personal lives and separate from our traditional public life. Our civic public life has no inherent morality. And more importantly, it has no legitimate authority. Yes, we have civic structures like the military, police, presidents, governors, and yes, they have power, but they don't always have legitimate authority.
Legitimate authority has the ability to influence a group of people without resorting to the use of force. A traditional ruler, for example, with legitimate authority, he can ask his people to go and take a vaccine. And they will do it because he has proven himself to be a legitimate authority in their eyes. He has their trust, he has their best interest at heart, he is capable, and they can hold him accountable. We will willingly follow a legitimate authority.
Now, an authority that does not have legitimacy in the eyes of the people can still get the people to do what they want, but they have to use force or bribery. So when a government finds itself unable to influence people except through force or bribery, it's really because the people do not see the government as a legitimate authority. The people cannot trust them and they cannot be held accountable.
In a system with legitimate authority, there are rules. There's morality. You cannot do whatever you want. A legitimate authority can demand morality and they can demand obedience, which we are willing to give. But in a system that has no legitimate authority, you can still demand morality. For example, you can set up all these constitutions and all these laws, but you cannot demand obedience. The people in a system without legitimate authority will do whatever they want.
So if a politician steals billions and builds a road in his own state or local government, that's okay. Because one, they stole from a non-legitimate authority, and two, they are diverting that money to a legitimate authority. Now, the question is, how did we get to this point? How is it that government does not have legitimacy in our eyes? The legitimacy that we give to our traditional systems, why don't we have that for our civic systems?
Again, we look to Professor Eke's write-up for answers. And according to him, the root of how we got here started during colonialism. At that time, the ruling class was English. They were the British. They had managed to convince Nigerians that they were the legitimate powers because they had advanced technologies, and we were just the backwards people who benefited so much from their investment in our development.
But then a group of elites, Nigerian elites, started to get educated in the English way of doing things, and they started to rise up. Soon, they were convinced that they should rule Nigeria and not the English. But in order to convince the masses to get behind them, they had to tear down the legitimacy of the English.
And to do that, the Nigerian elites, they started to sabotage the civic systems that the English had built. They did this by encouraging their followers to be late for work, to go on strikes for any and all reasons, to not pay taxes. Essentially, the Nigerian elites encouraged the average Nigerian to avoid his duties to the government while at the same time demanding his rights.
By encouraging that behavior, the Nigerian elites were successful at gaining the support of the masses to push out the colonizers. But the irony is that the average Nigerian maintained that resistant attitude towards government even after the colonizers left. The Nigerian elites were not only successful at removing the legitimacy from English rule, but they managed to tear down legitimacy from the whole system of government. And ever since 1960, Nigeria has been struggling to establish the legitimacy of government in the eyes of the masses.
Since 1960, every opposition political party essentially tries to gain power by tearing down the legitimacy of the party in power. But the way they do that is by eroding the legitimacy of the government itself, which in turn affects the opposition when they become the government in power. We hear these stories all the time that opposition is sponsoring oil theft or opposition is sponsoring banditry. And if these stories are true, the impact is that it makes government seem incompetent. It makes the people trust government even less. It erodes the legitimacy of government. So when politicians then enter government and they steal, is it a surprise that some of the people celebrate?
To those that are celebrating, the politicians are simply taking from an incompetent civic system. And as long as that money is being diverted to benefit them somehow, then they see the stealing as a legitimate and okay thing to do.
So what happens if we keep going down this road, the road where we continue to tear down the legitimacy of government?
Well, if we keep doing this, if we keep having mistrust of government, if government does not have our best interest at heart, if government is incompetent, then we'll keep looking to men like Joshua Dariye and Jolly Nyame to be our saviors. If men like them can steal billions and build us a road or a hospital while the government does nothing, then yes, we'll keep seeing them as more legitimate than the government. These men essentially become our Robin Hood. They steal from the rich government and give to the poor, and then we keep celebrating them, and we keep going round and round from one EFCC case to the next.
To break the cycle, we need to build up the government's legitimacy, and there are a few things that we can do here.
First is to get more people to vote, so that we're actively making choices about our leaders. Making these choices means that we will have expectations about what our leaders will do for us. But it also means that we'll be more willing to do what our leaders ask us to do. So if a leader that we vote for comes out and asks us to pay taxes, were more likely to do it because we voted for that person. We chose to give them legitimate powers over us by voting.
The second thing we can do is encourage and even demand healthy opposition from political parties. Political opposition parties should debate the issues rather than attacking the entire system. Attacking the entire system may get them to win the next election, but it will not allow them to rule in peace.
And finally, we need to think about legitimate authority as a system rather than a single individual. In Africa, we often equate authority with one person, but in a democracy, authority does not lie with one person. It lies in the entire system from the bottom to the top. In fact, authority actually begins with all of us at the bottom. By voting, we authorize them to lead. And we can also use that very same authority to hold them accountable.
The Backstory is a Triple E Media production. Production copyright 2022 Triple E Media Productions. If you enjoyed this episode of The Backstory and you would like to hear more, go to our website at 234audio.com to play the sample content. Then download our app from the Google Play Store for even more episodes. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel at 234audio to watch the video for this episode. Make sure to click the notification bell, like, and leave a comment. Our episodes can also be found on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn Radio, or wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe, like, and leave a comment. This episode of The Backstory was produced by Ramat Muhammad, Miriam Muhammad, Uche Mba, Dominic Tabakaji, and Sam Tabakaji. Executive Producer Ramat Muhammad. Special thanks to Mala Iwa Badu Ikaleku. A special thank you to everyone who took the time to share your thoughts with us. Your contributions are very much appreciated. I'm Ramat Muhammad. See you next week.